Oh yeah, baby, we are back on Coaches to the Moon with an amazing, amazing guest today, Mr. Gulliver Giles, ladies and gentlemen, a man I met on a golf cart in Fiji, and now we're turning into very close friends indeed, and I could not wait to have him on the show, because Gulliver has been in the game a long time. He's been in this online game for 20 years or so, and him and his wife, Leela, have created some amazing success across the sales, marketing, and online space, partnering with some massive names like Frank Kearns, Jay Abrams, and everything in between. So today we came in to talk about sales, marketing, mindset, strategy, all the things that have propelled Gulliver's companies to success. But we also dug into relationships, the realities of running a business with your partner or spouse, seclusion, and what it means to find fulfillment in your business and in your life. It goes up and down, this conversation. Heaps of fun. Gulliver holds no punches. Really, really fun guy to talk to. I hope you love this episode. I'm going to have him back for sure. Here he is, Gulliver Giles on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to shut each other up to continue the conversation properly. I'm very, very excited today to be joined by Mr. Gulliver Giles, Thor, the sales warlord, self-described as the best sales trainer on the planet. I know he didn't make that up himself. He's joined by Mr. Chickington, the coffee cup. I'm drinking out of a Peppa Pig mug. And Gulliver is a man who is going to blow us away with some stories about how he's risen up through the coaching ranks. That's all I'm going to say about it today, because Gulliver, take it away, mate. How are you? Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Alex. It's really good to be here, and I hope I measure up to even half of what you just said. I feel weird about that whole that best sales trainer in the world thing. A dude said that about me, and my staff have latched onto it, and they like saying things like that because it sounds cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot to measure up to, so we'll see how we go.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, I would love to give you everything I possibly can, but what, of course, would be of most use to your guys and girls out there that are listening to you. So whatever you need, what do you want to hear about today? What can we do?
Just want to hear about you and your beautiful life, Gulliver, and how, you know, so for context, Gulliver and I met on a golf cart in Fiji, and he's told this story before where he thought I was drunk the first time we met because of my jocular nature.
He's jocular.
Jocular is a word. I've been using that word since you used it 2 weeks ago when we first attempted to do this podcast. I love a good little sprinkle into my vocabulary. I heard him just say, we once rented out a resort here for a mastermind for our clients, and that was like red rag to a bull for me. I had to ask more about what that meant. We figured out we were in similar industries, sales, marketing, the online world, threw around some names that I knew, and so we hit it off, and now I think we're the very best of friends. So, mate, I hate to do this on a podcast because I hate it when it happens to me, but could you just encapsulate what it is that you do in a nice little package?
Okay, cool. So, I mean, maybe a cool way to do that would be to kind of tell a story of where we began and where we are now and what happened in between. Would that kind of frame it up for people nicely?
Love a story.
Cool. So I think human beings, like you said, you heard something I said and overheard me, or I overheard, we noticed each other because we are naturally curious people and we want to know stories, and that's what this is all about, right? Like marketing, copywriting, sales, this is storytelling at its core with a little bit more strategy sprinkled in. So Leela and I, we got together about 18 years ago, and I was, and Leela for context is my CEO and my partner. We got together and she was, you know, working in temp jobs at that point. And I was working as a manager of a 15-desk call center. I was like the manager for the state of Victoria doing outbound cold calling, calling the yellow pages, selling ad space in magazines. If anyone can remember what those were like, they used to be a really big deal. So we got together. We were kind of boyfriend and girlfriend. And around about this time, she kind of put it out to the universe. She said, look, I'm frustrated. I don't like the jobs I'm doing. I don't like the work I'm doing. I want to put my resume up online on some of the first freelancing sites. Guru.com was the one, I think, which is like a freelancing site, mainly Indian people selling their services into America. Outsourcing freelancing from home, gig economy. Like, this was back in 2003 or four or something. So it was like, you know, no one was doing shit like this. So she said, I'm sick of it all. I don't want to work at legal firms as a temp. You know, I don't get along with people. She would go into a legal firm with a 4-day temp assignment to collate all their stuff into an Excel spreadsheet. And then she'd, within the first day and a half, create like all of these shortcuts to systemize their entire office. And then the office manager would get shitty and threatened because she's doing a better job than the office manager could. So she'd get fired, and this would happen again and again. So she was like yourself, you know, like a lot of people probably listening, a leader, a CEO, efficient, brilliant, but of course didn't really fit into corporate jobs because of this, because, you know, of the way the large companies and middlemen and bad managers kind of work. They, you don't always identify a particularly young female talent, at least not 30 years ago. It's changing a little bit now, but it was bad then. So anyway, we met, and around about this time, she kind of makes a demand to the universe. An email lands on her desk, and it's like, hey, you know, I liked your resume. I would never hire you as an administrator because I think you've got a gift as a writer. I love the way you write. Would you like me to, you know, would you like to do some writing work, some ghostwriting work? And she said, oh my God, because she'd won a few short story competitions and stories, Ken. And Leela said, yeah, hell yeah. And then this guy turns out to be the managing director of J. Abram Asia Pacific. So if you're a marketer, you probably know who J. Abram is. If you don't know who J. Abram is, J. Abram's the reason you know who Anthony Robbins is. J. Abram's the guy who recommended that Tony Robbins put his late-night infomercials on at low cost to get reach over people who were up late at night hating their lives. And it worked like gangbusters. And he became a household name. And Jay's also worked with, you know, little companies like McDonald's and Lockheed and, you know. So he's a corporate consultant, pre-internet, so big strategic consultant. So she ends up working for his guys and doing a lot of ghostwriting and marketing collateral. And back then, what they were all doing was that kind of preeminent strategy of like, your book is your business card. You should write a business book and establish your authority and expertise in the marketplace, like 30 years ago, kind of 20 years ago. That was a really big deal, and there was no internet, and there was just starting to be, Google was starting to be a thing, SEO was starting to be a thing. So she ended up creating a whole bunch of article marketing and, you know, online learning packages as a ghostwriter and got paid pennies. And these guys went and sold these online and did what we're doing now and made millions and millions of dollars. And a couple of years into this process, you know, Leela sort of said, I've got this opportunity to go up to Sydney. And we were living in Melbourne at the time. So we went up to Sydney for a year and worked for this guy. And I left my corporate day job and cashed in my chips and sort of bought her an engagement ring. And we got together like in a more serious than boyfriend and girlfriend fashion and took this kind of career step together where I was kind of contracting to Tony Robbins and Jay Abrams. And we sold like a few million dollars worth of tickets to seminars for them. And we got really great results, and we hit this point where we were like, right, we've finished this big event, we've made a bunch of money, we're going to take a couple of weeks off and go to the Gold Coast. It was like Whitsundays, I think. And the dude that was running us was like, no, we need to put on another event. And Leela and I just went, you know, no. Like, we worked really hard, we need a break. And it just, everything melted down. So good lesson there for coaches. Don't just think of your salespeople as machines that make money. They're human beings. They have their own goals. Try and work with them on stuff like that. Otherwise, you lose opportunities to work with super motivated people that love working with you. So that happened, and we went back down to Melbourne. And we started our own company selling seminars. So we decided to teach what nobody else was really teaching at that point, which was how to kind of come up with a product from your IP, from your expertise. Because these guys were saying, you know, like, you should have a book to attract people into, you know, your coaching or whatever it is. But no one was really selling. There's like a handful of people in the world at that point, like Dan Kennedy and a few of his students. And they were 15, 20 years ahead of Australia. So no one in Australia it was really talking about information productization, and we became like the people. What we noticed when we started running our seminars on how to productize your knowledge was that people just did not know how to market themselves. So we started selling seminars on, well, let's get clear on your unique value proposition. Who are you niching towards? Or the really basic shit that most people still fuck up today. And then we realized that, you know, they'd get their organic marketing up, and Facebook was starting to pop at this point, and they start to get people interested in their free product, and they just did not have the guts to get on the phone and sell them. So when I was in Crawford, it was like you called the yellow pages, and there were people that did not know you or who you were, and they would tell you to and die every day for like 100, 200 calls a day. From that point of view, like we hit this point where we realized that no one was really, you know, it was back then in 2006, 2007, it was very much just put your shit on the internet and do some marketing and you'll never have to make sales again. And there'll be this amazing future where no one will ever have to be salesy and blah, blah, blah. And we're giving these people like the capacity to step from people that they have to cold call or walk up to who don't know them to actually leads with who put their phone number in to get the free article. And it's like, why aren't you calling them? And so we realized there was some work that had to be done. So I started amalgamating sales and some of my corporate skill sets and training teams into this. So we became like at that point, the first company in Australia really that was teaching how to get clear in your niche, how to get your value proposition straight, how to market on Facebook, which no one was teaching, how to do pay-per-click, and then how to sell people into something on the back end of that. That became the kind of, you know, the coaching business. So that was Strategic Anarchy. So we started off as a done-for-you kind of, you know, Business Writers Anonymous was a ghostwriting service for already successful coaches. And then we morphed into kind of teaching people from bootstrapping from zero to a million sort of thing, usually take a year or two, 3 years at the outside if they were doing what we told them to. We became quite famous for taking people to $1 million from next to nothing. And then we kind of got hooked up with the internet marketing scene over in the States. We went over to do a few different masterminds, and one of them was Frank Kern's mastermind, where his model was do Facebook ads, drive to webinar, close on webinar. And we went into his class, and well, we weren't really that successful at this point. We're only making $300,000 to $400,000 a year. And we went into his class, and we're like, we can't wait for the webinar to close because we're burning. Like, I think we spent like $12,000 on Facebook ads before we got our first $5,000 8-week course, right? So we're burning through cash and going, as you do, before you get like an actual result. So we did this. We did this thing where we said, look, you can wait for the webinar, or if you play this quiz and get the answer right, you can win a free consultation with one of our, you know, our high-level advisors, which was me. So that's where that sort of strategy session consultation kind of mechanic became in vogue. We were like the first to do that, and then everybody picked up on it and started doing it and copying it. Now the problem that then happened was people began to understand that strategy session meant sales call. And to be fair, like strategy session meant sales call with someone who didn't really have years of corporate sales background or marketing background or understood how to actually add new value. It was just, and you'll see this now, if you opt in for someone's strategy session, it's tell me more about your problems for like 5 minutes, and then it'll be, here's what I've got for you. And there's no fucking roadmap or strategy. To give you contrast, my strategy session would take 90 minutes and it would be end to end. Who are you? Where do you want to go? Solve all of your problems, give you a sense of results in advance. And if you wanted to get off the phone right now, you could just go do what I told you to. And at the end, we would say, but if you want help with that, here's our mastermind or whatever it is, yeah? So that was where we became quite famous. Frank started promoting us. We did classes with him in partnership. We did a joint venture where we taught a bunch of his people. He put like 45 people in a room for us at $8,000 a head. And then we put like 14 of them into an offer for like a $100,000 program. This is the first time anyone sold a $100,000 program. So a lot of kind of firsts, a lot of innovation back in the day. And we became quite famous for that. And much like In Excess, we kind of came home from having been a bit of a pub band that no one really knew to being someone who was playing stadiums. And suddenly everybody wanted to know us and talk to us. And, you know, we enjoyed some success. And we hit a point where we realized that, you know, and I think a lot of coaches are starting to see with things like ChatGPT coming up, that, you know, if you're not working on a way to systemize and mechanize your way out of being the one delivering the thing, someone else will. So in the last few years, like 4 or 5 years ago, we realized that we had the potentiality to create software that would replicate coaching results and basically create artificial intelligence that would advise coaches and consultants on how to manage salespeople and teams. So now a lot of our coaching clients use this on their clients, and a lot of our corporate clients use this on their teams. And I'm beginning now to step into allowing my consultants to take those clients. And now I'm more, you know, directorial and oversight than I have ever been, and will be more so in the next few years, because our real mission now is to, I think, proliferate the artificial and sales intelligence systemization that we've built into, you know, sort of total addressable marketplace of anyone, you know, who's making sales or running a sales team. Yeah. So that's a kind of brief history of time. I hope it wasn't too boring, but that's who we are. And I guess now you've got really got a whole bunch of questions, because I've seen you writing diligently, talking. So fire away, man.
Well, thank you for such a great story. And for covering so much ground. I was writing stuff down because I knew there was stuff I wanted to cover as you went along. I wrote down In Excess reference, because that's something that's always a bit of fun. but I forgot about In Excess. What a band. Okay, so the first thing I want to cover here is the fact that you built your success off of consistently realizing that you're creating problems for your clients, right? In a way, like, so when you were teaching them how to create a value proposition in a niche, then they're like, okay, now what do I do with it? Okay, here's how you productize your knowledge. Okay, but now I need to market it. Okay, now I need to market it. Okay, now I need to sell it. This happens a lot in my business as well, in that the first three bits, we can take care of all of those three things for somebody. Mm-hmm. And then where a lot of coaches get hung up is the sale. Even if there's leads coming through inquiring, it can be a very, very tough thing. You've been in this space for a very long time, so I'll ask quite a broad question. What do you think it is that most coaches struggle with the most when it comes to reach out to their leads and then moving them towards a sale?
Selfishness.
Okay, can you elaborate on that?
Everybody wants to get paid, yeah, but nobody wants to do the work. Everybody wants to make sales, but nobody wants to reach out to complete strangers and help them solve their problems. And everyone wants to be the coach, but the first sales call is a coaching call. It's where you show your value to that person. So we're usually in this paradigm of like, either we don't want to be the pushy salesperson, so we're frightened of calling them because they might not like us. Or we want to make all the money and we want to close all the deals as fast as possible. So isn't there an easier way than actually fucking talking to the people that we're supposed to be caring for and coaching? If you look at them, either of these extreme polarities, whether you're like McBossy, McBoss closer over here, or whether you're Mr. Doormat, pushy sales team.
Yeah.
I don't want to be like disliked by people. Both of these things are like selfishness and mediocrity. Both of these things are like self-focused. It's like, I don't want to experience discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have to work. I just want people to park some money on my Stripe account without me having to do shit. And you've seen, particularly over the last few years, there's a whole plague of these little bitches who are like supposedly sales, full stack sales boss closer, boom.
Yeah.
But they're all throwing the same shit around like, oh, you know, I'm a closer, but only if you can make the lead wander through the forest and then shoot a silver fucking arrow with a moon at midnight that lands in the heart of the sacred boar who's come through 5,000 BSLs and has his, you know, dick stroked by 7 goddesses before they get on the phone call with their credit card in hand. And then, and only then, are your leads good enough for me?
Yeah.
Closer of doom. Yeah. So to this day, like, I will occasionally get out the yellow pages and call it just to keep shit real. Yeah.
Love that.
A whole bunch of my leads are all opt-in for, you know, for a fucking article or something. It's not like they don't get the kind of sexy time that some people's leads get in a 7 billion step funnel, right? My marketing is, you know, enough to get them to the door, but my sales process is designed to get them through the door, right? So you see this kind of proliferation of so-called salespeople who are just really being able to close is just one skill set. But it's very contingent upon being able to get the client to open up and talk about their problems and being able to understand their values and connect their problem to your solution in a way that they feel as if they're going to actually get something out of it. And then you can close something. Most closers rely on a huge marketing funnel where all that value is added by a founder, and the closer just shows up to the take an order like the kid at McDonald's selling fries. I think that's what people think.
Yeah.
Sales is, and that's what people think sales expertise is, and that's what people, they have this vision of sales as some arrogant dickhead who's completely lazy and entitled, just sitting there waiting for money to drop in his lap. And I'm here to tell you, if you're trying to find the super non-salesy way of not selling to net, like, you deserve all the mediocrity and the lack of money that you have right now. And you are the one responsible as the coach, as the founder, for being fucking better than that. Because to do what everybody else is doing right now is not only lazy and selfish, but in the current economic climate, it's just suicidal. So I think that's probably the big thing. It's just like a fucking... humans are built to, you know, to kind of return to homeostasis. We're like bears. We only go sit in the cave and drink beer and eat chocolate. If we can get away with it, we'll be as lazy as we can get that. Our battle against that biologically ingrained return to homeostasis is what makes us great, you know. But we have to take on our resistance to doing work and our resistance to doing difficult things. We have to take that on like a daily battle with fire and the sword, and that's the difference between a good business person and a failure right now. And the difference between where I see people struggling with sales versus really smashing the fuck out of it is when they've embraced that as a very integral part of their career rather than a piece of dog shit to be picked up, you know what I mean?
It's interesting that you say that, because I think people would understand that if you want to get fit, you got to work really hard in the gym, that sort of thing, and in the kitchen, and that there's a trainer can give you a plan, that sort of thing, but you've got to put in the work to follow it. As a marketer, I have noticed more of a trend in people expecting hot leads coming through. Which whatever that means, like, these people aren't warm enough, and we will always endeavor to make them warmer and more educated by the time they get onto the phone with you. I think that people definitely, and probably through social media, have a false sense of how easy it is to create success in the online space, like you back in the day saying, create an ebook, put it on the internet, and the millions will flow in. I think that, there's social media and our ability to access successful people so instantaneously has definitely given us, potentially an amplified sense of how easy this is going to be, and people forget to do that work. So having people like yourself, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, give you a bit of the tough love every now and then, very, very necessary. One thing you mentioned, the selfishness. I love the word selfishness, because I was taught something by my first ever coaching mentor that stuck with me for like 8 years. Still remember it. I tell my clients all the time. When he found people like myself who come from a regular job, and now we're in a position where we've got leads coming in, we've created a marketing funnel, we want to make sales, and we're shitting ourselves to call these people. He said, picture it like this. You are a coach who can help someone to make a change in the way they want to. Just picture all your leads sitting on their couch at night, crying or lying awake, staring at the ceiling because the thing they need help with is ruining their life so much.
And for you to knock on the door and say, I can help you with that, could be the exact change they need in their life. And by not doing that, because it's scary for you, you're doing that person a massive injustice by allowing them to stay in the difficult space they're in. So yeah, it's not really adding to your point. It was just it's interesting. You said selfishness was the main reason people struggle with sales, because that was a huge reason for me to get out there and be like, this isn't about me anymore. This is about Holly on the couch, let's call her, and help her figure shit out.
Your coach was spot on. And like, if you do enough martial arts, you realize they're all very similar, except there's some variations, right? Like, they're all leaves growing from the same roots of the same tree. Like, some people use more kicks and more punches, more grappling. But at the end of the day, there's punches and kicks and elbows and locks being taught, right? Jay Abram uses his glass of water analogy. Like, I use the sort of love and fear. Like,
can you take us through the glass of water analogy, please?
Oh, so Jay's is like, imagine that you have a water store and the guy comes in for a glass of water. Is it not your duty to explain to him that maybe, you know, he should have 8 of these a day? And is it then not your moral obligation to sell him 8 of those and maybe to think even a little bit forward, will he have enough for tomorrow? Like, the analogy is like, stop thinking about yourself in your unlimited terms and start thinking about the needs of your customer first, right? So this is like crack for salespeople. I remember the first time I heard that. So like, when you get out of your own way and you realize that sales is about loving people enough to call them and go first and be emotionally vulnerable, even though you're a little bit scared, because we all are, and it's about letting go of the fears and helping them navigate their fears, you know, all of this stuff becomes really possible. When you've called your database enough times that you realize, you know, when you don't call people and you don't convert them, their number becomes disconnected. And the reason that their numbers become disconnected and their business is no longer there when you go and research their website is because they went fucking bankrupt because they were so scared of sales that they never engaged with you on sales training. You feel a deep sense of responsibility that, like, you've got. But when someone puts their foot in the door to talk to me, usually champagne is not pouring from the clouds. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, usually they're like, I need to do something about this, but I'm fucking terrified of doing something about this. And they're in a real moment of pain. It's like you said, the thing that Ollie's worried about is, I know I've got all of these leads. I know I'm making excuses not to call them. I can see the bills going up and the bank account balance going down. And if I don't get off my ass and do something about this, I am fucked. But I've got all these really great narratives being fed to me by the internet marketing industry about how it should just be easy.
And so, start a podcast, do an ebook, do a webinar.
And there's nothing.
4 TikToks a day.
Nothing wrong with any of those tactical moves if you have a fucking strategy.
Right.
There's a reason you're doing this podcast. I'm sure it's not just because you love the sound of your own voice, but it's part of an overall strategy to get shit done, to get people to see, look, I'm an expert and I'm surrounded by other experts and there's value here, and it will trigger off desires in you to step into my business and do stuff. I mean, like, it's to add value to people, right? In a strategic fashion, as a part of an overall strategy. I'm sure you also run pay-per-click. I'm sure you also have sales calls. I'm sure you have many pillars holding up the house so that if one of those pillars falls, the whole house doesn't fall, so that your kids can eat tonight. You know, the most of what that you're teaching and the most of what I'm teaching don't have that all figured out yet, 100%.
What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. Really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode. Yeah, well, that's another thing that we have to really ram home for clients when they come in, is that these, you know, 2 or 3 marketing campaigns we're putting out for you over the next few months, this isn't the only thing in your business now. Like, keep showing up. The people who are most successful are the ones who gain some success organically and then maintain that level of activity whilst we supplement it with paid marketing. And at a certain point, probably paid overtakes the organic stuff. But
you can't feed an army of salespeople with organic alone. Right? And I think with a lot of your people, if they're solo coaches, sooner or later they get to that point where they're like, I can't literally deliver all of this shit on my own. I need to put an admin person in place. I need to put an appointment setter in place. I need to put a salesperson in place to start removing myself from the day-to-day doing. And how do you do that while not letting go of the wheel and letting everything go to shit is a jump to hyperspace that most people never make. They never figure out how to let go of once you've got them actually doing sales, or, you know, once you've got enough leads coming in that they're like actually appreciating it, it goes from I don't want to do it to I'm addicted to doing it and I can't let go of it. And then we help, well, the places that we help is like letting go of that and letting other people take that work from them so they have a business rather than just a self-employed one-to-many six-figure coaching business that keeps them in a day job. It's great to build that. Like, I've got stuck there for years myself.
Yeah.
Transcending that and building a team around you, that's the sort of next level step that most people, A, never get to, B, because they never really take sales seriously enough to systemize it and correctly put together a process where they're like, well, this is exactly what I do and this is the order that I do it in, and now I can give it to someone else and teach it to them. And now I can have that person teach 10 people how to do it. And that's how then, like, the kind of the jumping off point where you're saying, like, getting them to just get inbound leads to a certain point is a struggle. And then the next struggle after that is getting them to let go of doing all the sales work themselves.
100%. Speaking of your wife, Leela, who you just delivered some coffee to, a question I tried to ask you last time we were podcasting before the internet sabotaged us. Aliens got in the way somehow. I am in business. My wife works extremely hard as a successful teacher.
Okay.
And wants nothing to do with business. My dad was in business. My mom was a nurse, then full-time mum who wanted nothing to do with business. So I've got no context of what it's like to be one of these power couples where you're both striving towards a same goal together, in the trenches every day together. What is that like for you as a strong and ambitious individual, having another strong, ambitious individual in the household working together, not only in life, but in business? What are the complications that arise? What are the best things about it? What are the worst things? I'd love to know.
Gosh. Well, how long have you got? Look, I feel like the big secret, and this is just my personal belief, and I'm sure there's people out there who are shining examples of how this is, you know, different for them, but this is just, you asked me about us, so I can only speak to that. I have no relationship mastery training package to sell you.
Yet,
I think it's really important in a partnership to have really fucking good boundaries. Yeah. And to have honesty and to be able to know who's good at what and to stay in your fucking lane. Yeah. And I think for me, like, where things have worked well with us is when we are both really, really clear and pulling in the same direction. And when things are not like that, it is like, I would not recommend it to anybody. It's like a living hell. Because you are married. If you think about it, like, the average person, let's talk in a pre-COVID paradigm, right? And now people are being forced to go back to the work. Maybe we're going to get back to the same kind of mechanic. So you go to work at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. You say goodbye to your partner. You get home at 5 or 6 at night. And you've got maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock until you go to bed. So you're married for approximately, you know, an hour in the morning and 5 hours in the evening, times 5 days a week. So that's like 25 hours. And then you got the weekend. Yeah. When you're in business, you get up in the morning together, and the business and the sales and the stressors and the partnerships and the clients that are being difficult and the ATO and the myriad issues, you face that together, and you face that until 11 or 12 o'clock at night when you go to bed. So you are married like literally 3 or 4 times more than the average couple. And you are married in a way that most couples would disintegrate under the pressure of. In fact, during COVID, you saw this. You saw a lot of people who went from, well, I can get away from him for like a good solid 8 hours a day at work. And all of the kind of issues and problems and, you know, disputes in the relationship, I could just kind of avoid them almost indefinitely if we just keep it light and breezy when he gets home. And we do nice things with the kids on the weekend. We can just avoid talking about how we really feel about each other fucking forever until the kids leave home, and then we can get a divorce. During COVID, domestic violence went through the roof. Arguments went through the roof because people were forced to really know and live with on a day-to-day basis, inescapably, inexorably, the grinding reality of the function of their relationships, you know? So I wouldn't recommend it to anyone that doesn't really, really, really want to because the realities aren't just the trips to Fiji and the champagne and the expensive restaurants. You know, it's not just going to Necker Island and being famous and being a millionaire. It's not just that. It's also having to kind of confront some brutal realities on a day-to-day basis together. So it's incredibly challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's not for everybody.
No.
Well, sorry, did you have a question?
I was going to say, I was under no illusion that, you know, most of it would be the trips to Fiji and the rest of it. For me, it would be like trying to have dinner when you've both got black messages popping off. Because for me, I'm kind of forced to keep the messages and the emails in my pocket while I talk to Ali about her day and about how her work was and which was the funny kid at work. It's an absolute blessing. I need that, man, to be able to make those boundaries. And so that, for you guys, I mean, you talked about boundaries. Do you set aside time?
Digital detox past X time at night.
Okay. Yeah.
In mode. Yeah. Like, there's so many little fucking things that we didn't know that we now have as rules, like, you know, don't break this rule. But what you just said there, you know, there's no work-life balance when you're working full-time in your business and she's working full-time in her career, or if you're both working full-time in the business, but there's nothing balanced about that. But one of my great mentors, one of the black belts from our kind of head dojo, Paul, he wrote a book on this, and he talks about Paul Mrachek. If you look it up, there's a book called Kotan, which is about like the warrior sort of ethic and stoicism and how to kind of balance your work and your life. And his basic argument is there's no such thing as work-life balance. It's bullshit. Mm. But what you can have is presence. So it's about, like, from a purely love and relationships and existing together as a couple point of view, like, it sounds like what you're doing there is one of the big things, is like really carving out the time to be present for one another rather than being that asshole who's on the phone all the way through dinner at the birthday party, or being that asshole who's on the phone closing deals in the restaurant at Fiji. And over the last sort of 15 years, I have been both of those assholes and several other kinds of assholes in between, because I couldn't let go of the wheel of sales, for instance. And this is a big problem that I now help people solve, is, you know, how to be less doing and more directive. But that's a battle that I've had to win first to be able to then train my clients. Like you said before, you know, it's about, you kind of teach your clients the problems you figured out that you've had or that they've had that you figured out how to solve. And there's always a what's next if you're actually doing the work on yourself, right? So part of that's presence, and part of it's, yeah, declaring it from a more business point of view. We are both high D, both high I personalities. Like, I like being in charge and telling people what to do. But this is not my company. Like, I'm a co-founder in the sales intelligence company, but Strategic Anarchy, you know, I came in as an employee or a salesperson in, and Leela founded the original business and that business. And now I'm taking more of the directorial role in this third business, because I have been fortunate. I have had a genius marketer and someone to take care of the administration and the taxation and everything, in order that I could just be good at sales and just be good at coaching. So understanding what your lanes are, what you're good at, who's good at what, but also in a partnership particularly where we're both really heavily kind of I'm in charge kind of personalities, as a man, learning how to not be in charge, learning how to say, all right, I submit, this is your company, I'm going to listen to what you have to say. That's been a difficult thing, like being able to sort of say, all right, well, I'm good at sales and I know what I know and I'm good at my specialization, but I have to listen ultimately to my CEO. In any business, someone has to be in charge. And in this business, it's not fucking me. That's not my skill set, you know?
It reminds me a bit of how we parent our twins, because there's one of them who, when she's super upset, only I can fix it. Mm-hmm. And the other one, when she's super upset, only my wife can fix it. They will not calm down for the other one. And so knowing when you've got to be like, I can't fix this, and giving away the control and having your ego go away. Last night we had double tantrums going on, and my wife needed to go and just finish her day. So I was like, you go, I'll handle this. And like 20 minutes later, I was like, can you please come in and help me? And had to, let the ego take a back seat. And I know that there's definite correlations to be made between family life and business.
It's human relationships, right?
Yeah. Mm. Trials, tribulations, consistent ups and downs, all, hopefully for a worthwhile end result. Not even the end result, the pursuit as well of building a beautiful family is the same as building a beautiful business. And a lot of us are just thinking about the end result and forget about the fun of doing it day to day as well. I think probably, we will always be holding on to, we got that trip to the farm in a month, that'll be sick, without thinking about, how good is it just to, have dinner on the floor with these girls tonight. So same with business. I love putting out fires a lot more than I used to, and I'm sure you put out plenty in your time.
I have been a firefighter in many ways for a very long time. Look, if it was easy, we wouldn't be excited by it. We wouldn't want to do it. But yeah, so from a relationship's point of view, and in partnership, knowing whose strengths are where, and knowing to respect that, and when to shut up and listen, and take direction, and when to take initiative. That's whatever marriage you're in, whatever relationship you're in, whether you're in business or not, these are valuable skill sets. But particularly in business, where you're under a lot of pressure, there's not a sort of safe harbor relationship where you come home from work and you know what you're getting paid every week, and you know what your savings are, and you know what you can spend on, what you can't, and as limiting as that is, you have some stability.
Mm.
It's like that. It's like it's going up, it's going down. There's 10 times more than there was last month, and whole shit, now we can't afford milk because the ATO decided XYZ. Like, everyone's been through that shit, right? Being able to face that together is like the hardest, most challenging, and most rewarding thing ever. You're kind of back to back, shield to shield, facing down demons on the bridge every single day that you're married and in business together. But I wouldn't give me the choices that I have to make again, and I wouldn't choose anything different,
Always the answer I give as well, because everything regretful or good that I, have done has led me to where I'm at now, which is a very happy place. As we close out, mate, mentioning things like family, digital detox, you and I have a shared love of the outdoors. You live in sort of rural Geelong in Victoria, is that right?
Yeah, we've got a house in Labus Hill, which is like on a couple of acres. It's like probably 45 minutes from Apollo Bay, Port Campbell. It's like right in the middle of nowhere. It's great. So a lot of hunting and fishing. We have another house in Geelong that we rent, which we use kind of to hop between airports.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we've been on more planes and more flights to seminars in the last month than we have slept in our own beds.
Yeah. And so what is it about, a lot of successful people or ambitious people would go, let's go to the city, to the hub, where you can go to every coffee shop and bar and network and do whatever you need to progress the career. What is it about that seclusion of your couple acres that you feel is beneficial to your life?
I think it's like life has seasons, right? So like when we were living in northern New South Wales, and we were, taking the coaching business next level, living by the beach, living in the sun, was fantastic. And we hit this point where Leela was like, I have to know how big we can take this. So we moved to Melbourne, back to Melbourne. I'm a Melbourneite. We met in Melbourne. And we opened a big office in South Yarra and paid $250,000 a year in fucking rent for 3 years and ran our own seminars and really made a splash. And then we hit the end of that period. We were like, okay, let's take some of this profitability and punch it back into living a life. I think we're a little bit burned out at that stage. And that was a lot of what made the decision. We were watching people who were a lot less successful than us, with a lot less money than us, buying farms and living their lives and making those choices to like have a lifestyle and raising chickens and planting things. We were like jealous. We were like, well, why can't we have that? And then it sort of occurred to us, well, we fucking could, but we just don't. So we bought our little hobby farm, and then we started spending every weekend there. And then it went from every weekend to every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then we just stopped going to the office.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Right around the time COVID happened, we were like, well, fuck off this lease. And then the COVID happened. So we sort of dodged a $750,000 a year bankruptcy, kind of a bullet there, I think, which is good. And all our staff have worked remotely on and off for the last 18 years anyway. So it really didn't hurt us too much. In fact, it was something we showed corporates how to do because they still haven't figured it out. Still trying to force their staff to come back to work because they can't manage any other way. So why the farm? You know, because it was the dream. It was like, you know, a couple of acres, a few chickens, a couple of cows, three dogs, two cats, four-wheel driving, hunting, fishing, being able to go forest bathing, like being able to go and ice bathe in a 4-degree pristine river, going trout fishing, being able to go fishing 15 minutes from work. Like that's really exciting when you spend like 10 years grinding, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a part of your soul that's like, you know, fuck all of this. Like I love my business, I love my clients, but you get to a point where you're like, nah. So we got to that point and we maintained a, you know, $1.5, $1.8 million business from a farm, which was nice. And it sort of, it kind of got to the stage in the last couple of years where we were like, you know what, 45-minute, an hour trip to the supermarket and then another hour back, less access to amenities, coffee, Uber Eats, getting a little bit older, I'd like to be a little bit closer to stuff. So we took a couple of rentals to sort of test out what living in a more urban life was like. And for us, I think, you know, the Geelong thing is like, it's an interesting experiment because it's like being able to walk 15 minutes and get luxuries like really, really good sourdough, you know, good food. You just don't have that in a remote location, town of like 100 people, right? But I also can't get up tomorrow morning and walk down the hill and be 15 minutes away from the gummy shark that's waiting for me to eat it for dinner tonight. Or, you know, so there's trade-offs, right? But yeah. I think the reason that we did it in the first place was because we're in a season of our life where we really needed to nourish ourselves and take some time. So we did it. And now we're in a season of life where everything's exploding and I'm, you know, heading towards 50. The business is getting bigger. We're taking on more staff. We need to be close to airports. We went to TED. We went to NECA. We went to all these different things in the last year. Things are starting to pace up again. We're getting a lot more requests like this one to come on and be part of media and getting a lot more exposure with, you know, Leela's deals with Del and Dwayne and, you know, all that kind of stuff and the television appearances and the third business. And it's just like, we can't be 4 hours from Melbourne sitting on a 2-acre property and do all these things. And what we've really realized is, you know, we're never not going to be these people. Yeah. We can take a little break for a couple of years, but like, this is who we actually are. And that's what makes us, lights us on fire. We are people who are, we're not going to be happy unless we're flying around the world by the seat of our pants doing 17 seminars in 2 weeks. Like, it's just who we are. So I think it's just, the older you get, and you're probably finding this more too, like the more you recognize who you really are, the more you admit to yourself, these are the parts of me that, as much as they might drive me nuts, they're never going to change. So I have to accept it and double down on what I'm actually good at and who I really am. Part of getting the farm was letting myself have the joys that, you know, that I'd always wanted and hit the goals that I'd always wanted. But part of not being at the farm is recognizing that I'm an entrepreneur and I'm never going to be happy or satisfied with anything ever. And that I need to be doing all the things and killing myself in the effort, because that's actually what turns me on. So it's a weird thing to discover. You know, I think humans need white space, and this may change. You know, there may be a season in my life where I'm happy to take a little bit more time and work on my whiskey collection and my trout fly tying. Maybe I'll be 20 years older when that happens. But right now it's like, this is the chapter of my working life where I'm the most powerful I've ever been. So it's like, I need to get off the farm and on a plane and go and do some cool shit.
Well, if there's nothing, if the main thing I've realized about our conversation today, mate, is just a tremendous amount of self-awareness coming from you and also pulling back the curtains on just the realities of having multi-million dollar businesses, running seminars, powerful mates, big power couple, you know, quotes, the dream, because I think a lot of us are chasing the dream, and you know, you reached what you thought was a dream and it wasn't. And for you, the pursuit, the relationships, the speed of it, and that's what's you know, making you happy and fulfilling you. And we're all trying to find that, and speaking to people like yourself who have the experience and the insight to help us discover that is really, really great, mate. So yeah, a lot more of a subdued conversation than I was expecting from us, from our first meetings. But dude, what a pleasure having you on today. Thank you so much, mate.
Well, honestly, like, you know, I guess we are all multifaceted little beasties, right? Like there's the side of me, you know, where I can be the aggressive, you know, warrior, and this side of me where I can be the loving partner, and like yourself too, probably, right? Like there's places where you can be a lot more intense if you want to. But you did ask me a whole bunch of questions about relationships, yep, and stuff, so I have to answer those from that.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know where it was going.
Talking about sales technique and how to manage salespeople, you might find me a little bit different.
I didn't know where it was going today, mate. We talked a lot about salespeople.
You can have whatever you want. If you want to do a second episode where we go more, you know, fire on the sword, yeah, definitely. And particularly, like, you would have noticed earlier in the call, right? Like, ask me about what pisses me off about the industry and you'll get that. So it's been an interesting mixture, interesting difference in texture, like you said, but it just depends what your people get the most value from, right? If they hit you back and they're like, I want to hear more about that, I'm more than happy to do another one, which is more how-to or more technical or more around the specifics of sales mindset. But this has been fun. I really enjoyed it, man.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, well, I never know where these things are going. Salespeople are a dime a dozen, and we got some great, great salespeople have been on the last few months to give us tangible tactics. And today we went in another direction, and it's been really, really fun, mate. I'm really excited to meet you again in person whenever we manage to do that.
Awesome, brother. Well, you have an awesome day, and I will go make my wife another coffee because she probably needs one by
now. Cheers, dude. Well, anyone who is listening live, well, not live today, just on the recording, I love you for that. Thank you so much. I'll be back next week with another amazing guest on Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thanks for listening. Much love and peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.